beautifully. Just like an aerobics class prepares you for your life, then it's just easier to get up the stairs. It doesn't change the fact that you have to go up the stairs, but it makes it easier to get up the stairs because you've done the exercises. So that's what we do here. And this 365 days of daily meditation in the workbook is, when it says it's a mind training, it says early on in the textbook, it says an untrained mind can accomplish nothing. But really, that's not exactly. It sort of leads you to believe that we have untrained minds, but we don't have untrained minds. We have horribly trained minds, many of us. Many of us have horribly trained minds. You know, I love that book, I'm sure it's in the bookstore, by Don Miguel Ruiz, called The Four Agreements. And in that book, he says that the process of human beings, what we sort of call, you know, socializing, is really domestication. We're domesticated like animals. We're born with this innate internal guidance system. In Course in Miracles language, it's called the Holy Spirit. I'm not crazy about that term. I'm not crazy about a lot of the terms of the Course anymore after having lectured on it for so long, because I realized that even the Course itself says you can't even say the word God without conjuring up an image. If you've had no religious training, oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky. If you were not raised in a religion, you are so, so lucky, because you don't have as much unlearning to do as many of the rest of us. So a lot of times, as I would be maybe counseling someone or lecturing on the Course, people come up with these questions that make it very, very clear that they believe that the Holy Spirit is an entity. It's a thing that lives outside of them, that talks to them through some internal microphone. They use the word God as if God has volition and something that's different, as if God is that man on a throne in the sky watching you on video. Right? And that's not what it is. That's not what this is. And so I don't use those words as much as I used to. When the Course in Miracles talks about the ego, it's very clear after a while that people get the idea that the ego is a thing, that it's an entity, that it has a will, that it is sort of roaming around and drops in and out. And the Course in Miracles itself says the ego doesn't exist, but it is a belief that you have that there could be a will other than perfect love. It's the belief that there are separate lives and separate beings and separation, which doesn't exist. Okay, so Don Miguel Ruiz says we're indoctrinated into that belief system. We don't come here believing it. We come here totally in touch with our internal guidance system. We know exactly who and what we are and what we want, and we scream till we get it. Right? We go, oh, I'm hungry. You know, we just scream until our needs are met. Don't stop. You know? Don't stop screaming until you get your needs met. It's just that we learn as we go along that acting in a very natural way is unappreciated by the society. So it's enculturated out of us. Instead, what should be taught us is just better style. You know, don't scream, but learn to ask until you get what you want, basically. You ask until you get what you want. Jesus said, ask. Your problem is you haven't asked. Ask. Ask and it is given. Right? Knock and the door is opened. And so what the Course in Miracles does in this 365 days of daily meditation is all of the beginning lessons are the undoing process of you've been domesticated in a certain way. That domestication is rooted entirely in fear. Let's begin as best we can to undo. It's not a complete and total undoing, but it undoes as much as is necessary to then begin to teach a new thought system. But the new thought system, even though it seems radical, sanity seems crazy to an insane mind. Right? The Course in Miracles says the truth is very simple, but simplicity is very difficult for twisted minds. So the answers come in and they're simple and they're rejected usually as, that's too simple. You don't understand. My case is different, right? We are always special. Our neuroses are so unique and fabulous. that they cannot be helped by these simple principles. You know? And so it takes a little bit of undoing in the beginning, and then the reestablishing of what the Course calls the thought system of God, which is the thoughts of love and peace and joy and life and all good things. And we are being trained to get in alignment with that, rather than trying to get God in alignment with our insanity, which is what a lot of us tried to do for years with no success. I'm over here in this horrible nightmare, God, please join me. And then I'll tell you how I see this all turning out, right, and how to do it. First of all, kill them, punish them, make them have a lot of sex with me. Right? So, our real spiritual awakening comes when we realize, no, I need to get in alignment with that stream of well-being, that stream of goodness that we talked about, that river of golden light. It's very Taoist in many ways. It says the Tao just flows. It's completely impersonal. That's what God really is. It's impersonal. And really only goes in one direction. That's why the Course in Miracles says the Holy Spirit's teaching takes only one direction, and it only has one goal, and it's always going in that direction. And many of us are constantly trying to swim upstream, and we are taught by the culture to do that. That is what makes you a good American, is that you go out and conquer things, you know? And all of our teachings say, relax, go with the flow, relax and let go, and just go follow that stream. And we go, that's so lazy. That's so lazy. I have to make good use of the day. What the hell does that mean? Many of us every day are trying to earn this little bit of space we're taking up in the world. We are justifying being here. We have a list, and we like to recite the list to people. Know what I did today? I did this, 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 I did this. So now I get to live another day. I deserve to be here because I did all this stuff, right? What if you just never did another thing the rest of your life? How would you live with yourself? I just consume goods. That's why I came. Right? You'd be ashamed to say that, wouldn't you? You'd just say, I just consume. I breathe the air. I eat the food. I get the clothes. I just please myself. Like, how dare you? Right? And yet, that is the secret to a joyous existence and life and all the love that you could ever want in the world. The most beloved creatures in the world do nothing to earn their keep. Nothing. They are absolutely useless. And we adore them. Adore them. What has a baby ever done for anyone? They're all about me, 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 me. I'm hungry. I'm wet. I want to play. But we adore them. We can't wait to help them. What about your pets? We adore them. They do nothing for us. Nothing. It's not even, they're not even as good as children. Because no matter how old they get, they'll never be able to go out and get you a pack of cigarettes. You'll never stop picking up their poop. Ever. But we adore them. But we're taught unnatural ways of being, you know? And we're taught that you need to work and earn your way, and we know, it's true, that the hardest working people in the world always live in poverty. Is that not true? You know, I had some friends who used to come to the lectures all the time in San Diego. And a couple of years ago, they moved to Costa Rica. I'm geography is not my strong suit. Gossip, that's my strong suit. Not geography. Some place that you have to get on a plane to go to. I know. And they, so they come back every now and then. I hear from them also by email. And they are loving living there. And it's just a much more relaxed life for them. But one of the things that they do, they're very much, they love to like be involved in sort of helping people. That's like, you know, something that's just natural, which I think is natural for all of us. But they really like to spend a lot of their time helping people. And so when they went there, they part of what they started doing was teaching these principles to the people around them. So they have like on their they have a big front porch and they do like Course in Miracles things with the people and stuff. But what they also wanted to do was help with the culture a little bit, where what this man was doing was starting this foundation to help some of the people with, you know, those micro loans they do now, to help them get set up sort of in their own little businesses, you know, to do things that they're sending some of the kids to school because they couldn't afford and all this stuff where they're helping. But when he came back one time, he said that the hardest thing for them to do was teaching them that they deserved this. That was the hardest part, was the mindset of them getting that they deserved to thrive, because they're taught a kind of, you know, and of course through their lifestyle, to be inordinately humble. Not humble as in I don't aggrandize myself, but humble as in we're just poor people meant to struggle like this. Like we're supposed to struggle. Struggle is natural. That was the hardest part for them, teaching them that like it's not, there's nothing wrong with you not struggling. It's okay for you to make your own money and be able to send your children to school. And he was in no way trying to Americanize them or make them ambitious in any way. We're just talking about just the basics in life, just like to be able to send your children to school so that they would not, so that they would have, you know, maybe a chance to choose some things that do not seem choosable to them now. You could do this. I couldn't do that. I absolutely couldn't. Like he's having to fight with them to do that. I lecture on Sunday mornings in San Diego at a hotel there, and there's this wonderful woman there who helps every Sunday morning sort of set up the room. She works at the hotel, and she does the continental breakfast that was in the room next door to us for a long time, but she also set up my room and vacuumed and did all this stuff, and she was just very sweet, and we would chat a little bit. And so there's a big bowl there that the people who get the continental breakfast will leave like tips for the people who are working there. And so I just was so grateful to her, and I believe in giving, you know? So one morning I think I put like $100 in there, just because it was like, I know that she probably makes minimum wage at that hotel, and I know that she's working harder than the people who are making more money than that. And I was just so grateful to her for serving the group that way. So I just threw the money in there, and as I was getting ready to leave, she had sent over the other girl to give me back the money and started fighting with me about not taking the money. I can't take this money. And so I had to basically fight with her to force her to take the money. But I had to make an agreement that I refused to live up to, that I would not put money in anymore. She was like, well, then you can never give money again. Like you're paid up forever. You know? Well, what is that? That's just consciousness. All that is consciousness. That your work is not what gives you your livelihood. Your consciousness gives you your livelihood. Your consciousness gives you everything. It gives you your relationships and your health, and everything comes from our state of consciousness. And that's this reprogramming that happens to us. We begin to grow in our belief. We begin to have more expansive thoughts. I talk about the 90% solution. This is my new thing. The 90% solution. Because we live in a culture that lives in the 90% problem. And what I mean by that is that even people who devote their lives to helping oftentimes live in a consciousness of 90% problem, 10% solution. And what that means is how much focus you give to one or the other. Many of us give 90% of our focus to the problem, and then we go to 10% of the solution. And you see this a lot in the media. You see this a lot in television. You'll see a show that's on, and 90% of it is describing the problem. And then the last minute of the program is, but you could do this. Okay, that's not helping us at all. It keeps us in the consciousness of the problem that guarantees the problem will never, ever, ever change. Jesus said you will always have the poor with you because you have a poverty consciousness. Not because poverty is natural, but because of your mindset. You believe in the laws of poverty far more than you believe in the laws of abundance. You believe in the laws of sickness and death and pain and loneliness and fear. And we come together on a morning like this to say, what's the 90% solution? Let's stop describing the problem now. Let's describe the new way of being. And the new way of being comes from a willingness to break free of the old, to let go of our, we have a tremendous loyalty to the thought system that is all around us. And we have to become people who are very, very strong in saying what we allow into our lives, meaning the things we read, the things we look at, the conversations that we have. Watch your conversation. Watch how much time you spend being an expert on why you're screwed, on why this doesn't work, on why everything is just a little unsatisfactory. Right? Watch how much time you spend talking about that. And then watch when you're talking about the good things. And then always be asking yourself, how does this make me feel? How does this make me feel? As I'm talking about this, how is it making me feel? Someone asked me about this movie that came out recently. They said, did you go see this movie? And I said, when I see it, am I going to feel more optimistic and hopeful and joyous about life? No, then I'm not going. No interest in going then. Does it give me a lot of time about the solution and a little bit of time of describing the problem? You know, we understand the problem in 10 minutes. Is there anybody here who's not clear yet about the problems in your life? Right? You are an expert on the problem. You don't need to go over the problem one more time. We know what's wrong. Let's go see a movie that spends 10 minutes talking about how we're screwed and then spends the next 90 minutes talking about things you can do to make things better. That's a good movie. That's a movie worth seeing and financing and paying your money towards. Because you know what? Your investments pay off. When you pay to see a movie that says we're screwed, you're saying, I'm investing in that belief system. Here's $10. Put that on, we're fucked. Right? That's what happens. Right? Let's see the movie that says we'll go over the problem very quickly and then we will spend a whole lot of time about all the people who are doing things that you can get behind. Right? Let's see the talk show that talks about that. Right? You know what I think was fascinating about, was maybe 6 or 7 years ago, maybe even more than that, when Oprah started out with the Angel Network, so much better than the crap she's doing now. She's so in the problem now. I never watch it. It's always people crying and complaining, and it's hopeless, and it's awful, or it's about nothing at all. But when she did the Angel Network, it was with this thrill of enthusiasm that you can make a difference just with your pocket change. We're going to build houses for people. We're going to see how much good we can do, and it was exciting to watch it every day because it was about nothing but how we're helping. How we're helping. It's so exciting to help. It's so exciting to be part of the solution. It's so exciting to be part of something that's making a difference. That's what you feel good when you're doing it. That's what we want to be talking about. That's what we want to be looking at. We want to start to language ourselves in a way that makes us feel good. Because when you feel good, you're automatically part of the solution because it's a vibrational universe that we live in. Your vibration is going out and it's feeding everybody around you, right? So because it's a vibrational universe, when you feel good, it feels good to be around you. When you don't feel good, it does not feel good to be around you. God help the people who have to live with you. right? So much of the news is about how, you know, it's amazing how we diagnose everything now. And everything has a name. And as soon as you name something, you give it life. It becomes something that has life. Well, you know, you have that syndrome. You have that disorder. You have that whatever, that thing. And then it becomes, oh, I have this thing. If somebody tells you you have something, re-diagnose yourself. I started thinking about, because the names of them even always sound hopeless. It might as well just say hopeless right in there. Right? You have attention hopeless deficit disorder. Right? It's so awful. I made up some new ones. I have magnetic personality disorder. Everywhere I go, people are drawn to me. I can't help it. I have magnetic personality disorder. Everywhere I go, people just love me. I can't do anything about it. It's hopeless. There's no cure. I have long-standing chronic optimism. I always see the good in everything. I try to find the bad. I just can't. A joyous attention syndrome. I just keep focusing on happy things, no matter what. It's like a blip in my brain. I have a chemical disorder that always moves me into happy, happy, joy, joy. You know, we watch the news, and the news is always so full of words that just like, oh. You know, I've told the story here before about living in Palm Springs, and, you know, it's like the poor weather people there. Because, you know, the weather's pretty much always the same. It's like it's boiling hot in the summer, and it's like, you know, temperately hot in the winter. You have almost nothing to say 90% of the time. But the news is all about sensationalizing things, you know? Big graphics and music and all this stuff. So I remember the weatherman there saying one day, I mean, I wish I would have had this on video. Because they were ready to cut to commercial, and they said, when we come back, the weather, there is the threat of drizzle. How will we go on? You start to become aware of how you describe your life to people. We talk about, in that book, Postcards from the Edge, Carrie Fisher talks about, I narrate a life I'm reluctant to lead. Tell a better story then. If you're telling yourself a story that you don't like, tell a better story. There's no one in there telling that story about your life. You are narrating it and describing it. If you don't like the way you're describing it, describe it differently. We've talked here before about Abraham talking about stop being historically accurate, be emotionally biased. We describe our lives like we are the narrators of a documentary. Or the witness to a crime. And you think about, why am I telling this story in a way that makes me feel horrible? As I'm telling the story, I'm feeling worse and worse. And a lot of times you leave out things that would make you feel better because you got to sensationalize it. So what we're saying is leave out all the horrible stuff. No one cares about it anyhow. They care. When people are listening to you, they're like, we don't care about you. We care about us. So please tell it in a way that's entertaining me. Say something that makes me and you both feel good. So tell the story in a way that makes you feel good. Narrate the life, no matter how exclusive you have to be in narrating it. That's the Course in Miracles has a whole section that talks about goals. When your goal is peace, you'll tell the story in a way that makes you feel peaceful. You could say, oh, God, last summer I saw the whole continental United States, every state. You don't have to tell them you were abducted. That's a drag. It's a downer. Right? Tell it the way that makes you feel good, right? Someone else paid for everything. Ugh. I started, you know, last year when the tsunami hit, you know, there was so much devastation that we saw there. And that word just became like this buzzword again. So about, I think it was the beginning of this year then, I said to Zan, you know, I've decided now that there is a tsunami of blessings that's hitting me right now. I'm engulfed in a tsunami of blessings. The other day when we, all this stuff about the bombs, you know, because first of all, these are things that you can't do anything about. You know, was there anybody in here who had the power to stop that tsunami? Right? It was just going to happen no matter what. That's just what was. So you help as best you can. I'm sure most of us here sent money and, you know, aid that we could. But then you reframe the words that terrify you. Right? Last week when this thing about the bomb, you know, if it was on the way, there's nothing you and I were going to be able to do about it. So I started saying to Zan, you know, that because that word, then there's that fear of that word bomb. I said, well, I'm being bombed with love right now, and it's nuclear. You know, it hits, it just spreads out like this wave of nuclear power that just obliterates everything that's fearful and sick and poverty-stricken and angry and old judgments is just being nuclearized, right? With this love bomb that's hitting me. You start changing the way you think because it shifts your vibration. It moves you into a different place where you're open to receive. And as you receive, all of that good flows through. You can't not serve the universe. You are serving the universe. Every time you breathe out, you're breathing out carbon dioxide that feeds the plants. You know? We are serving all the time. And you can only hold so much good anyhow. And anybody who hoards their good loses it eventually anyhow. So for you to be open to receive the gifts of God just makes you a better being to be around because you're more, aren't you more generous when you have? Right? Let me take you to lunch. Let me help you out. Let me give some money to charity. Let me give some time because I have the luxury of not having to work, you know, 90 hours a week. So I can come over and help you clean out your closet or whatever it is. So we want to start moving in the direction of describing our lives in such a way that we feel good about being in it. Because it shifts how we feel, and how we feel then becomes our point of attraction. What's the goal of the course? Inner peace. You guys are so good. You're so good. Because if you ever forget what the goal of the course is, you just look to see who publishes it. The Foundation for Inner Peace. So if the ultimate goal of the course is inner peace, then that's a major idea of, am I reaching my goals or doing the things that will help me reach my goals in this particular moment? Is what I'm thinking about, what I'm doing, the conversation I'm having, contributing to my sense of inner peace, or is it contributing to my sense of inner chaos, desperation, pain, upset? Am I justifying why I'm limited? Justifying why it can't possibly get any better? Or am I seeing myself as limited to the few options that I've been told I have? So, lesson 185 of the workbook is, I want the peace of God. To say these words is nothing, but to mean these words is everything. If you could but mean them for just an instant, there would be no further sorrow possible for you in any form, in any place or time. Heaven would be completely given back to full awareness, memory of God entirely restored, and the resurrection of all creation fully recognized. No one can mean these words and not be healed. He cannot play with dreams, nor think he is himself a dream. He cannot make a hell and think it real. He wants the peace of God, and it is given, for that is all he wants, and that is all he will receive. The Course in Miracles talks about us having conflicted goals. Abraham also talks about us having conflicted goals. You have something you want and a belief that interferes with it. The Course in Miracles is far more stringent than that, in that it says, if you really want a goal completely, if you want it with all your heart and soul, then you really have to drop everything that interferes with it. And there's no way you will not have it. It is given to you, absolutely. So to say that you want the peace of God, first of all, is absolutely guaranteed because you already have it. You're asking for something you already have. It's like me saying, I want brown eyes, I want brown eyes, I want brown eyes, I want with all my heart. There's nothing that I want more than I want brown eyes. Okay? So you already have the thing that you want, but you might be wearing sunglasses and not be able to see in the mirror that you have brown eyes. So you have to remove the obstacle to the awareness that you already have the thing you want most. No one cannot have the peace of God if it's truly what they want, because they're saying, I'm willing to let go of everything that might interfere with it. Some of you who read my weblog know that I had a birthday last week. I turned 46. And that, for me, was one of those things where you... for me, it was a place where, just without even wanting to think about it, I just made that leap to, in my mind, going, well, in your late 40s now, which means you're almost 50, which means you're almost a half a century old. And to me, that was sort of like a significant thing. It's completely meaningless. It's totally made up. But to me, it was significant of like, you're almost a half a century old. And it was so significant that it was fabulous, because it made me reevaluate very quickly a lot of things, like in a split second of like half a century. So you look at certain things you've been doing for half a century and you go, that's never worked. This would be an excellent time to stop. Like, I would like to stop before I hit 50 so that I cannot actually say, I tried it for half a century. Because if you've tried something for half a century and it's never worked, you are really stupid. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's pretty dumb. That's not tenacity. That's like, duh. So there were certain things that I just was like, I'm just not ever going to do this again. I'm just absolutely, completely, totally, 100% finished with this. And one of those things was, I've had all my life such a horrible relationship with food. Just such a sick, twisted, horrible, fucked up relationship with food. And of course, then that means you have a horrible, fucked up relationship with eating. And then, of course, you have a horrible relationship with your body. That's why you have a relationship like that with food, because you've upped the body. And I thought, I'm kind of done with that now. I've tried everything for 50 years. I mean, when I was a tiny baby, the issue, I was taught to have the issue of food, right? You're domesticated into it. So I was taught to have an issue with food, which was that I didn't want to eat that much. I was a picky eater, so food was made an issue. You have to eat it. You'll sit there until it's gone, you know, always trying to get food into you, when your natural set point is, you know if you want food or not. You have an internal guidance system as a child that will tell you when to eat. Children don't just, no baby is going to starve to death out of choosing not to eat, right? Doesn't matter how little you are, you're not going to starve to death if you're not, you know, if we don't make you eat, right? So my entire life I've had really a fucked up relationship with food. And, you know, I've tried all the different programs, and the great thing about all the nutritional programs and the diets and everything is that they all work. That's what's great about them. And so the law is everything works, but nothing works for long. You always have a rebound effect, you know, because it's usually something that you know you can't do for a lifetime, or it's something that if you do it for a lifetime, you will be policing yourself for a lifetime. People who eat naturally are fine. Their body hits their set point, whatever it is, and your set point is probably not Kate Moss's set point. It's probably not something you'll see in magazines or television for most of us. Our set point is probably not some perfect ideal. But we're taught to try to achieve some almost unattainable idea. And so we have these horrible relationships with food and with lots of other things, with money and sex and this and that. But this was one of the big things for me was, I am absolutely done having a horrible relationship with food or exercise or dieting, because I am always thinking about it. I'm never not thinking about food. When I'm eating breakfast, I'm thinking about what I'm going to have for lunch. When I'm having lunch, I'm thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner. And some foods are clearly sinful foods, and some are good foods, because we have moralized food and eating. We've turned it into a religion. Sinful indulgences. That is so fucking Catholic. Okay. Catholics must be running the diet industry. Right? So you cannot moralize around food because food is neutral. There's no sinful food, there's no bad foods, there's no good foods, there's just food. That's all there is. And I made up my mind, I am done. At almost a half a century, I'm done thinking about food. I'm just going to eat. I'm only going to eat when I feel like it, and I'm going to eat exactly what I fucking want. And I'm not going to eat it out of spite or being bad or feel guilty when I do it.